MongoDB?
No.
Yeah.
No, MongoDB doesn't count.
It's evil.
So the thrust of the talk tonight is that the names that we just brought out, right, aren't really relational database servers. They are a poor, corrupted version of what the promise of relational theory held out for us. And they are what the vendors are selling. The vendors sell what they do because there's a market that doesn't know what relational algebra is. And there is and now we're watching the free systems, Postgres, MySQL, SQLite, imitate the proprietary vendors. So I want to talk about what I mean by all of that. I think I just lost my connection. Hello? Hello, hello, hello?
Did I turn it off?
Yeah.
So I want to talk about what I mean by all that and suggest to you that investing your time in learning more about this subject and in working perhaps with some of the free databases to bring them into a modern era is a worthwhile and interesting thing to do. A relational database is based on three simple ideas. It has a set of data structures, it has a set of operations on those data structures, closed over them, it has a set of integrity constraints that enforce, that keep the data consistent so that you know when you're trying to draw an inference from the data in the database that it's, that your inputs are sane to begin with. This is the way that Ted Kahn characterized the relational model back in 1980. It distinguishes relational databases from almost everything else that we use. If you go to the root of your file system and you say find a file, you don't have a mathematical proof that the results that you got are in fact derivable from the data in the system. When you say select star from your table, you actually do have a mathematical proof for that. It was designed to be an inference system. Sorry? However, the system that was described by the theory was based on sets. It was based on relational algebra to manipulate those sets. It defined domains for those sets. Every element in your set is a logical proposition. It's a set, it's a statement about the key and the attributes of that key. The attributes are statements about truth about the key. Right? These things are true about that. The constraints in the system make sure that those things are all internally consistent. We can't make the database be correct in the sense of absolutely knowing that what's in the database is true about the outside world. But we can make sure that what's inside the database is at least consistent with itself. Anyway, sets. So we had sets, we had a set of very simple, a very nice algebra to work over that, those sets. And instead, unfortunately, what we have in our systems today are tables and SQL. Tables, you'll note, unlike sets, do not enforce uniqueness. Right? In a set, you don't have any duplicates, but in tables, you do, or at least can. Going the other way, tables also don't enforce uniqueness in columns. And what I mean by that is, when you issue your query in SQL, there's no selection of there's no limitation on the number of columns you're going to get or the kinds of columns you're going to get, right? If you've got two columns of the same, what should happen in relational algebra is that they're coalesced. Right? You shouldn't get duplicate columns and you shouldn't get duplicate rows. You're doomed in the definition of the algorithm. But in SQL you do. So rows and columns aren't unique. The SQL that you use is not math. The types that we have are the very simple ones that came out of the original systems, System R and Ingress, 30 years ago. How is it we're still trying to catch up to this? Why are we pursuing this particular set of objectives? I want you to think about all the languages you use and all the systems you've run them on and all the time that's gone by, and to ask yourself if there's a language left from the 1970s that you still use today, except for SQL.
You bet. C.
Yes, there's a question.
Serious question. SQL works. It works pretty well. We get a lot of stuff done with it. So why do these deviations from the official relational model actually matter?
I'm glad you asked that question. The question is, who cares? And I would like to think that this will address that very question. And if it doesn't, I would very much like to make it that it does. So I hope that by the end of the presentation I've answered that question. And if I haven't, I really want to. Okay, so I just wanted to address the point that when SQL was invented, it was not expected to play the role that it plays today. IBM was using tiny little machines. I'm pretty sure, I didn't check this before I came down here, but I'm pretty sure that System 390 from 1986 or so was a 24-bit addressable system, right? These are very small machines. There was no anticipation that something as complex as a relational database is going to be used for transaction processing. Nobody had time for that. So they gave us an end-user query system so that the programmers in the IT department wouldn't have to MIS take all the time, right? Wouldn't have to write reports. That was the origin of SQL. I don't have any end users who write any SQL for themselves, so I don't know if this was ever a realistic idea, but that was the intention. And in fact, if you look into the history of the language, you'll find that SQL is modeled after other fourth generation languages that IBM was selling at the time. So one of the problems when you try to go to use SQL with the so-called relational database that we have today is that if you bother to learn the relational algebra, you find that the concepts that are expressed, that those concepts only find their way very indirectly into the SQL language. You find yourself typing a lot unnecessarily. Select star from. How many times do you type select star from? In, say, MATLAB, for example, if you want to see the data, you type the name of the variable, and it comes out. Another thing that's missing is that there's no, I bet it's the only language you ever use, where there's no assignment operator.
Haskell.
I can't claim to use Haskell, so I don't know.
It doesn't.
No? But you also wind up not having certain other things you like very much, like the ability to compare two tables for equality, the ability to compare two rows for equality. So my contention is that the tool is really inadequate to your skill, and that if you had a tool that was more amenable to programming, more like a real programming language, you could get more done. That's one of my points. Another one is that because it's so easy to use, too many people who don't know how to use it do use it. Maybe all the queries in your databases look very nice, but I've seen a few that I would really be ashamed to be associated with. It does not encourage a set of logical set-based expressions, and this actually is tied to both sides of that. The contention from the theoretical people is that, in fact, because SQL isn't rooted directly in the algebra, the mathematical transformations that would be available to a query optimizer simply aren't. Right? There are a lot of tricks inside query optimizers to figure out what to do, but one thing it can't do is simply rewrite the query according to algebraic equivalences. And that limits what the optimizer can do. I actually spoke to the fellow who writes the query optimizer optimization work for the Ingress database when I was in London in June. And I asked him about this. And he couldn't think about too many, but he said, I'll tell you, the one thing is the Ingress database supports two query languages. It supports QL, which was invented a long time ago when Ingress was first written in the 80s, and it supports SQL, which came along later. And he said, when I, there was stuff inside the query optimizer that was very happy when there weren't any duplicates, when Quell was the story. But as soon as we hit the support duplicates, there's some pretty nasty stuff in there. So my recommendation is, why should we keep doing this? I keep watching this to go get more and more complicated. I'm watching professional people find other ways to solve their problems. And here we have a perfectly good theoretical answer, all that simply needs implementation. I understand that there's a huge market of people out there who don't know anything about what we're talking about here tonight. But I think there's a small market of people who do know what we're talking about. And who benefit from a better, more powerful, more logical tool. CGDate has proposed a different language. It's if you want to really read about it, you've got to buy the book. This language is doesn't look like SQL, and it had It has seen some implementation. I actually got it to work on Ingress. There's a branch of Ingress called the Project D branch. And you know, it functions there, sort of. There's a toy database that's used at that Hugh Darwin uses to teach these concepts called RHEL. It'd be awfully nice, I think, to bring Tutorial D or something very similar to it into a more powerful system. The last time I gave a talk similar to this, a year ago, people asked me, Ingress? Do you really use Ingress? And in fact, I do. I think in the ports and in PackSource, you can find a version of Ingress. But the one I'm talking about was released as a GPL open source again for the first time, again in 2006. It is a commercial product. There is an Ingress company, which I think a week ago changed its name to Actian. Sorry about that. Ingress, as I said a moment ago, is already multilingual. There is a Tutorial D port of it, but before that there was an SQL and a Quell port, so it has it's architected to be able to take in multiple languages. And it's a real full-fledged system. I think I could make the argument that it is more mature than any of the names that we mentioned tonight, with the exception of Microsoft SQL Server. So it's a, you know, you can tie into their source code system and bring down your you can hack on Ingress just as easily as you can on any of the other names we talked about. So here's just a little example, three little examples of why the language looks different. If you just want to know what's in your data, what's in your table, you just ask for the name of the table. If you want to remove a record, you've got a minus equal operation on the table. If you want to select according to the criteria, there's a grammar for that. It looks a lot more like the original relational algebra, and it supports the notion of equality in things like tables and rows. So you can operate at a higher level. My contention is that the pre-databases are making the mistake of following this whole trajectory down the SQL road. And they're also making the mistake of hanging separately instead of hanging together. We never think about what web server we're going to connect to when we use a browser, and we don't care a lot, usually, about which browser we're using when we connect to a server. But that's not true of relational databases, of the technologies we're talking about, right? You're either an Oracle shop, or an Ingress shop, or a Microsoft SQL Server shop, or a Postgres, whatever it is you use, there's not much interchangeability between them. I think this is a mistake. I think that we should define a standard set of a standard wire protocol, something equivalent to HTTP, but for data per day basis. I think we should have a standard API. I agree there's not one of those for programming to the web, but there is a very good reason to do it for database work. There's no need for free database management systems to adhere to the SQL standard. Really, no need at all. They can, you can have it if you want to, but the reason that standard exists was to sell systems, and mostly it's an amalgam of ideas from different vendors. There's a lot of optional parts of the standard. Who cares about all this? Instead, we can start from the first principles. Right? We can start from relational algebra, we can use tutorial D, and we can develop a much more powerful language to work with. Another thing that the commercial vendors have ignored, really, I think, is the chances to change what else you can do inside the server. For example, at least the vendor I use at work, we have Microsoft SQL Server. So you issue a query and it comes back in text. Pretty much, if you're going to get an answer, it's going to come back in text. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to get a graph sometimes? Why would you bother to do that? The reason you bother to do that is lots of times it's the input is much bigger than the output. Right? When you're drawing a graph, oftentimes you've got millions of rows of data and only a little chart come out of it. So for efficiency reasons and for portability sorts of things, that's a nice idea. At least in my shop we deal with this quite a lot, so it's a hobby horse of mine, I suppose. It seems to me that what's missing here is the idea that the tools that we're using with the relational database should only be text-based ways to do raw querying, right? Why can't there be any better tools to summarize the data, which is what you really had it there for in the first place? It's been done, by the way. Postgres. There's a project out there that stuck R right inside the server. So you could access the tables using R grammar or something roughly like what I just said, and get R functionality right there inside the database server. Nice features.
Question here. There's a database called NoSQL, having nothing to do with the movement, which relates a lot to this. It's basically have separated tables that use awk as a query language. Falls right into place with a lot of what you're saying.
NoSQL uses
not the movement.
Right. Right. It uses awk as its language?
Not exactly. It provides the relational algebra operators as command line tools which are connected into standard pipelines. The limitation language has to be awk because it's easy to develop for and it's fast and it does the job. But the nature of the NoSQL system is that you are in fact constructing pipelines of relational algebra operators.
Uh-huh.
So it is in fact exactly what you were talking about. And it is quite useful in its way. I mean the relations are stored in ordinary files on the ordinary file system, which is, by the way, is far more robust than any database ever built. How often nowadays do you have to rebuild your file system versus how often do you have to rebuild your database?
I'd like to take that question up. I'll interrupt myself right here to do that for a minute. So the assertion was file systems are more robust than database systems. File systems don't go corrupt, so you're better off keeping data in files. Yes, I don't want to oversimplify what you say.
Yeah.
So I would answer that with two things, right? One, at the very beginning we talked about what constitutes a system, right? We had structures, we had operations, and we had constraints. But no constraints for what's in a file system. Second, transactions. There's no way to manipulate two files and be able to back them both out. Not Can't say that there's no way. I will say it's not a built-in feature of most file systems. So it depends what you want from the system. Okay.
I'll point to Git, which is a limited purpose database system built over a file system that assumes very little about the integrity of the file system under it.
Mm-hmm. I've often wished for that myself.
Yeah.
You know, I've often wished that I could use my file system in more relational ways. You know, I have no complaints about that.
Have you guys ever touched your work with the file system or RAIDOS? The DOS file system?
I actually read the book. It was recommended to me.
Yeah.
And it has... I've come back to that.
Great.
Okay, so... the other thing I wanted to, this is sort of a little bit to your point, actually. I wanted to just mention...
Don't go away.
Ah, good. That some of the stuff that we're doing in SQL, right? Granting permissions, creating namespaces in the form of schemas and these kinds of things. Those seem to me to have much better analogs in Unix, in our heritage here, right? I think that when and we know, right, that in 1970 the notion of namespaces was pretty immature. Much more developed now. We ought to bring that into the relational systems. Some of the conventions that we're happy with at the command line, there's really, they have direct analogs inside the database. So. One of the hindrances is...
Go back to that slide, I just wanted to finish with the list. Let's see. Editor, path, more. No pipe?
Oh yeah, pipe, absolutely, it should have pipes. Alright, so if you want to draw the table, why can't you just...
the grass, you don't mention pipes, that's why.
Yeah, if you want to drop a table, why can't you just remove it? Why do we have to say draw a table? What do we need this for? You don't have to say what it is, when you remove it, it's gone. So I talked a moment ago about how web servers don't have this weird protocol-specific connection. That the way that the web grew, the way the internet grew generally, is by adopting protocols, standard wire protocols. I left the slide out of this particular talk, but we know from how these two areas grew up, right? From how the internet grew up and how relational databases grew up, we know they happened at the same time, and they happened in very different ways. So there was never any intention on the part of the database vendors to create a standard protocol. And here we have a bunch of free systems, and they're all competing with each other instead of working together to create one interchangeable protocol. I will tell you, having looked at those protocols, they're none of them very good. They all have problems. Most of them aren't aware of those problems, or they wanted to think it's something simple and easy because that was the place to start. The right thing to do is to figure out the full set of functionality you need from a protocol and get it all in there and use one library to make it happen. Once we've got two implementations, we've got a complete set of tools, right? Yours truly works on the free TDS library. I don't take credit for the entire thing by any means. I'm just the maintainer of the project. But I have learned a few things about how you move data back and forth between databases. And that's what allowed me to find the flaws in the systems and the protocols that I've been able to learn about. It's a certain kind of expertise. But there's nothing unique about using Postgres or MySQL from a protocol point of view. You still have to still construct the data back and forth. That's the only thing you better do. You've got to be able to do something else that they didn't let allow for. One, a lot of these systems only have text moving back and forth, but you lose precision quite easily for floating point numbers. Two, they don't provide for ways to cancel the results. You ask for a million rows, you've got to take a million rows. That's not a good answer. You have to be able to cancel them. You have to be able to accept them. These are easy enough things that once you've dealt with this for a little while, you find them all, put them all in. Make it happen. I don't know. I don't necessarily think that pre-TDS is the TDS, the tabular data stream protocol, the preaching is something that is the way to do it. But it's certainly a way, it's certainly a mature way, it's certainly a set of features you want to cover if you're not going to do something else. It's got to be binary, it's got to be cancelable. I think one of the problems, one of the major difficulties in adopting a different server technology is at the programming level. Some of it, you might say, look at OVC in just a moment, but there is an awful lot of vagary, an awful lot of, you know, personality in the APIs. And there's, again, no need for it. Certainly, fundamentally, the information you're moving back and forth, the need to what, for what you're doing isn't that different depending on the time of the server. So we really should just define all the pieces in just one protocol, one API, I'm sorry. I'm going to go out of order here in a minute to come back to that. We'll go in order. When I talked about this before, people said, hey, you need to use ODBC. Well, there are a few problems with that. One is that a lot of the ODBC drivers are not all that well wrapped. And the reason for that is that ODBC isn't all that well defined. Mostly what ODBC does is the same thing the SQL standard did. It mostly what it does is say, okay, things are going to work pretty much like this, but all these little dark corners, we're going to say those are vendor implementation defined. They don't all necessarily do the same thing. Talk to anybody who's written ODBC drivers. They'll tell you the same thing. Yes?
It's a silly correlation. What about JDBC in that sense?
I don't know much about JDBC. In Java, you don't have pointers, properly speaking, right? So you've got better ways to pass that kind of information around. One of the defects in ODBC is that some of the 32-bit things are pointers.
And Java fixes that because it uses its internal format only, but you still have vendor-specific implementations on the other side.
Right.
It seems to happen with Perl and Python.
Yes. 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 That's an interesting way of thinking about it. You have the same thing in DBI and Perl. And because whatever the defects may be in ODBC specifically, anytime you're wrapping a bunch of binary drivers in some kind of thing that's going to be generally usable, you're going to have to leave a lot of undescribed corners. You're going to have to. This is all very close to me. I wrote a C++ library to wrap all this sort of stuff. And after a while, I realized that all this wrapping I'm doing, all this making things nice and clean, is impossible. One, because the drivers are ill-specified. Two, because of the protocol that's underneath. And I thought, you know, if I had a standard C library that I could use to get at these things, I wouldn't have to do any C++ manipulation. I wouldn't have to invent ways to make different database APIs look the same. And I thought, well, how different is, semantically, how different is reading information from a database stream from reading from a file? Semantically, how different is pulling information into variables in your C program from scanf? I think this is the right way to go forward. I think that all the free databases should adopt standard I/O as a model for their API program, for their API.
Yeah. I like that.
That means that if you take the idea of adopting scanf seriously, you have a string API. String APIs always suck. And furthermore, those string APIs, are run against runtime interpreters, which have to figure out what the little percent sign lobbies in the mean.
So your concern is the cost of the interpretation of the mini language for the scan format, the sample format scan.
Not just its cost, but the fact that it's arbitrarily error prone. You get absolutely no help from your compiler, your IDE, or anything else.
I see.
So this is what I'm saying. The background behind giving the string API to suck is illustrated by writing out HTML, which is usually done with a string API in LeapKernet.
Mm-hmm.
And people forget to escape. They forget the different escaping rules apply in different places. You know, what comes out is junk. APIs should deal with objects.
Yeah, I don't. I thought that may be an interesting thing to talk about. I mean, you might be able to convince me that there's a better way to do this. This seems like at least a place to begin as a standard format.
But there are also examples of, you know, this is pretty old stuff, but with Oracle and whatnot, you could use the database to generate code that would get the data in and out of whatever variable. It wouldn't be very far put to have it generate some sort of symbolic language that allowed you to unpack data from your database without you literally hand coding it.
That's interesting. If you go back to the 1980s when these things were first coming out, you didn't have API libraries in general. And all the database vendors expected you to run some kind of precompiler and for that to run over. I think the way that turned out was it wasn't very easy to use, and it sort of fell down as things got more complicated.
It worked great if you're using Fortran, COBOL, or PL1.
Yeah, well, that was another thing. I think I've seen that for C, but...
We're glad for C.
So the gentleman in the back asked me why I came here to talk about this and why we should ditch SQL. And my answer to you is that a better language would make me a more productive programmer, and that would make you a more productive programmer. That's the first reason. Another one is you wouldn't have to deal with this schlocky language. You'd actually have something that you could use to manipulate your relational objects, your relational data structures in a mathematical way. I want you to remember that the relational database market, so-called, is 10 times bigger than the operating system market by far. Oracle is way more than 10 times the size of Red Hat. I did it again. Thank you.
Sorry.
So it's worth our time. There are a lot of dollars chasing this, and there's a lot of jobs available for it. Right. So if we bother to spend our time on it, there are people who will want to use it and can benefit from it, including us. And the other thing I would put to you is that if you're going to be programming a relational database server, you're going to find yourself encountering all the same kinds of things that you'll find inside any operating system. We said a moment ago that there's some connection between how file systems work and the way databases keep things in a file or on a disk. But you've got memory management questions, you've got scheduling problems, you've got permissioning issues. All the same stuff is repeated inside the relational database server. So yes?
There's possibly an interesting parallel so SQL in a lot of ways holds back the kind of easier or better way of thinking about relational databases, and in some ways, POSIX file semantics holds back file systems.
I think that's a defensible argument, yes.
You can definitely see how there are a lot of conceptual similarities between what you want to do with a database and what you want to do with a file system, but there's no way to describe a transactional, multi-file, multi-byte range kind of interaction with a file system.
Right.
But if you could do that, then you could effectively implement a database, an asymptotic database for the file system.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that because, just to repeat you for the people in the back, there are certain connections perhaps between the way SQL interacts with a relational database and the way POSIX describes file systems. A few years ago, Mike McCusick was out here at the BSD con, and I actually sat in the audience and asked him a question along those lines. I said, "What about transactions, Mike?" And he said, "No, transactions aren't something you do in a file system. Transactions are something you do in a database." So there you are. So my charge to you is invest yourself in this a little bit. Find out more about it. I imagine I'm the first one who's walked up to you and said, SQL sucks, and by the way, there's better ways to do it. You can read more about it. You can find out about Tutorial D. You can read the third manifesto. You can help me with the Ingress port. There's a bit of nastiness in there with machine specifics that once we get past that one file, it might actually work. Ingress today, just so you know, runs in good old Windows. It runs in Linux, 32 and 64 bit. It runs on the Macintosh, does not run on the BSDs. used to. It's quit again.
What's the problem?
What's the, there's no significant problem. The problem is just making the machine definitions so the thing will work. And there's a pretty nasty file in there for where that gets done. But once you're past that, it should work roughly. There's no.
At some point, Ebert's pulled the machine definitions out.
Yeah.
So they, yeah, are more likely to run.
Stop chasing them. Probably that's what happens. Yes, it's a mess. It's in that area. There was something I was going to tell you about that. I can't remember what it is now. Maybe it'll come to me again. There's plenty of portability built into the system. They just didn't chase down that particular branch. Yes?
Not knowing much about the ingress company, I can't remember the name you just said.
Axion, yes, it's called now.
How do they operate? Is it more like the way MySQL used to, or is there a like commercial branch of ingress that has feature sets that are not in the GPL version, or is the GPL version the same thing that they sell?
So the question is, what's the difference between, what's the relationship of the company to the code, roughly?
Yeah.
And the answer is, if there are pieces of the ingress system that you, when you buy the whole thing from the ingress company, from Axion, you get some proprietary code. A basic usable system is GPL. They have a column store system now. That's all proprietary. Yes. Did you have a question? Oh, sorry. So I'd love to see Ingress running in the BSDs because it's a powerful, useful system. I think if we're going to experiment with APIs and warrant protocols, SQLite is a perfectly good place to start. In fact, SQLite may be a good place to experiment with a better language too, because it's A, in the public domain, B, is a very simple, small system. So we can start with something that's easy to understand. So there you are, those are some ideas to do.
Might have to extend the bytecode a bit.
There's definitely some work. This is my recommendation to you. Yes.
Has SQL affected the way the internals of the relational databases work so that they are not as well suited to more of a pure mind and relational operations?
The question is, to what extent has SQL affected the internals of these systems such that they're sullied by SQL aspects and not as purely relational as they might be? I cannot answer your question very effectively because a lot of the code that we're talking about is proprietary. I can tell you that the fellow at Ingress, I relayed what he told me about this. I also asked Jim. Now, just a minute, and I'll remember Jim's last name, but he'll come to me in a moment. I talked to him about it. He's the fellow who wrote a lot of the Firebird server you might know about. It used to be Interbase back when it belonged to Borland. It's also free nowadays. Starkey is the man's last name. Jim Starkey lives in Cambridge and by Boston. And he told me, that's fine, that there's a relational algebra, but I don't think about relational algebra when I'm trying to write my database servers. I've got SQL, I've got a set of transformations I can do from inside there. It has its limitations, it is what it is. There's no way you're ever going to get somebody to use Node language. So I think there is a lot, of necessity, there's a lot of binding between SQL and the internals of the systems. Yes?
I'm not just that. I know that Oracle specifically, SQL is the language they optimize for. PL/SQL, which is their own language, runs orders of magnitude slow because all the optimizations are primarily for SQL.
Yeah, well, it's then how you look at it. I mean, certainly, if you would need a new query optimizer for a better language, would you need a new storage backend? Probably not.
I would think not. Yeah.
Now, if you want to do all of tutoriality, then you have to play in the objects in database fields world, which is something that's, you know, I mean, the thing about databases is they only contain elementary objects, and they have strings and dates and numbers, you know. Tutorial D databases potentially contain things that are not elementary objects. You know, do you, you know, are, you wish to store, you know, some arbitrarily complex object from your old programming language in the database? Of course you do. How do you do that? Well, you say that the type of this particular column is, you know, is account factory, and so it is. In order to get that right, it is, you know, puts the demands on the back end that it would otherwise have.
Yes, another interesting feature of Tutorial D is you can put tables in columns.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting actual operations for manipulating that, and that it goes towards being able to do aggregations. Okay. Is there a question?
I guess maybe it's a little bit more of a statement. A number of years ago, I wrote a system using MercDB, and it doesn't really deal with the Java data structure, it's just, you know, ultimately a key value store, but I found that in running a search engine around it, there were a variety of things that were, after the code was written, and after kind of examining what the code was and essentially how it went together, it was a lot more explicit about, you know, how do you do the join? You create a set of cursors with a set of constraints, and then you join those cursors together, and you get the product of that. And someone said, well, why don't you rewrite this in SQL? And I thought, well, that just would be a pain in the ass.
Because essentially what you do is write your own query optimizer.
Yeah. But all the values were, all the pieces were already in the language that I was writing this all around, as opposed to having to, you know, do the query and get text and basically tear apart, you know, each column or, you know, each row of the columns, the variables and so forth. It was already in a good place. And it's sort of, you know, when you were talking about the standard I/O model of that sort of an interface, a lot of ways Berkeley interface is like that. And I found that the indexing methodology was a lot more flexible and controllable because the data that you didn't say, okay, create an index on this column. You said, use this function to index this data in this particular way. And you wrote that function and you could basically index things any way you wanted. And that meant that, you know, 7 years ago, I could write something that was far more efficient than an SQL database could have done for the same, you know, data set.
Yes.
Well, kind of segue, you know, I don't want to be too myopic and hijack this conversation, but the perfect segment of the question I've been thinking of here, it has to be brought up, it's natural to bring up, this NoSQL movement, right? So as a Unix systems engineer working in all these internet-facing web environments, and the development languages and the core business is built on top of things where you have teams of people who understand their language, their tool, a lot of ORMs, a lot of object relational mappers, and so get into these environments at this point where beyond even all of what you're talking about here, which is incredibly appealing, we have a situation where a huge surface area of developers don't really understand the data structures in SQL at this point, right? And so there's no SQL movement coming, which I almost see as this kind of scary, dark ages or middle ages coming upon us of a return to key value stores, right? Just exactly what you were talking about. Now, these models are to me, even ironically, in a lot of applications I've encountered, being built in a key value store sort of way with objects being mapped on top of SQL. Many, 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 many layers of marshalling of all kinds of things here. Absolute insanity, right? So we have all of these interesting things like Redis, for example, right? These very brutal, simple key value stores coming in and swooping in and being this very effective solution because they're performant over all of these layers of marshalling to do these very, very kind of bastardized things. So basically what I'm getting at here is how the heck do we get and inject into this environment something where now we have an alternative to SQL and an already confusing mess of many, many, many tools, when at the end of the day, it's the application developers implementing logic in language of choice, as you were saying, sir, in some object language, dealing with their data as objects, dealing with application business logic in application, how do we inject some of these better ideas into that for a situation so that we don't end up with what I'm starting to see as this goes on is a lot of application churn and a lot of, like, we're back to square one. Applications are being rewritten from scratch in 6 month cycles, data layer to the front, and that's not acceptable in a lot of business contexts, right? Especially even internet side business contexts. So where do we go from here, man?
It's a hard problem, man. I'm going to have to answer that a little bit. Do you have any time?
I have the best answers going in this route. And the biggest problem with ORM is that we're translating objects to SQL to database.
Yeah.
Now, if we go into something that translates directly the object to the relational model, it just simplifies everything. You get rid of the biggest problem with ORMs is that they're inefficient by nature. They're creating SQL, which is a secondary language, to translate it to the relational or data model in the end, which the object already knows, the database already knows, and SQL is a very, very bad translation, very inefficient form, which is half the mess and half the problem you have with things up.
In a way, ORMs have become the sort of glaze over how bad SQL is, because developers don't really want to deal with SQL and getting data in and out. Like I was talking about before, with what I had written, I didn't have to deal with all of that because it's already in a place where I wanted it to be, but it also creates the opportunity where you could change the underlying query language to, you know, fit into an ORM, essentially. The ORM doesn't change, like the API to the ORM for the developer doesn't change, but the expression of that ORM to the database changes to something that's much more expressive or efficient.
So go to the SQL translation for the free TDS, for example.
Right. So the way he sort of creates an isolation layer, opportunity to generate, to do something new because people are not writing nearly as much SQL as they used to.
Can I then maybe ask you, is this an opportunity where then, what I'm trying to think about here is a conversation of injecting things like pre-TDS or the, what's it, tutorial B and all of this into the application developer's tool palette, or to actually try to start actually focusing the work on, how do I put this, standardizing the object interfaces with which people are working in their given language or environment, and starting to actually encourage more standard behaviors between data, the way that data objects are manipulated, so that, well, I mean, then we're just back to some middle layer problem again.
Actually, there's a way out of that, and that's to take the idea of link from the CLR. You know, so in C Sharp and VB.NET, you have recent versions of them, you have the idea of link with a key, which lets you represent things that look like SQL directly inside the programming language. And what they really are is functional objects that get properly elaborated at runtime. So it looks as if you are pulling things out here and there and doing it all eagerly, but it actually all happens lazily, you know, at runtime in the background. Namely, if you're pulling out of XML, then you're retrieving things from XML, from some XML data store in memory or elsewhere. And if it is a SQL backend, that works well too. So what you have there is a relational algebra with a thin SQL painting over it, very, very thin, and you can express it can easily be generalized to express the full relational algebra. And then you would simply need a back end that would talk directly into the relational algebra. So to add this kind of capability to other languages, you know, like Java, C++, God help us, et cetera, would be a very valuable step in this sort of general revolutionary project. Because it would provide the problem again. It gets rid of the string API. You don't have functions to call it. You have it seamlessly embedded. It brings back the preprocessor idea, but in a tight, structured, you know, known to the IDE, checkable, known to the IDE kind of way.
Yeah, I will tell you this the question you posed reminds me. I think you can find the paper pretty easily online. Ted Codd's speech, his acceptance speech for the Turing Award lecture, was 1982, and he talked about the motivations for creating the relational model. And he specifically had a couple of things in mind that you just mentioned. One was that non-programmers had no way to look at the data. There was nothing equivalent to an ISQL kind of a tool. So it was very difficult to interact directly with the data, in fact, impossible. So he wanted to create a facility to do that. That was one of the, Ted Codd never specified SQL. He didn't like it. But he did say that there ought to be a data mini language to be able to manipulate the objects directly. That was one of the things that he was, one of the original motivations. Another one was, something you were speaking about, is data independence, right? The notion that you should be able to express the query about the data without caring about the indexes and the links and the pointers and the traversing of the hierarchy. You just simply state what it is you want, and the system will go and find it for you.
And we have got that. It's just that it's done in a horribly crude and messy way, so people use it. I am willing to bet that most embedded SQL statements are the form select star from and maybe a word closer too. But everything else is done in the third generation conventional way. Cursor runs over the thing, you know, reformats or discards or whatever the hell it does, and that's, you know, so that's using SQL like the file system, and like file system containing only sequential files at that.
I think that there is some truth to that.
Yeah, something else I wanted to mention was that if the obvious candidate for a wire protocol, not a wire format, but a wire protocol, is HTTP 1.1, because it provides all those things you actually want.
Except for session.
Except what?
Persistent session.
Yeah, but do you really need sessions when
you don't
really
have long current query?
If you didn't want the whole query in the first place, you should have specified an HTTP byte range. Or, you know, the
concession. You don't want all the data from the beginning, though.
or for that matter, you can just drop the TCP connection, and that works well too. In terms of, you know, the advantage of HTTP is that it's stateless, and the advantages of relational algebra is that it's immutable. And stateless and immutable go together really, really well.
I don't disagree that there one property that he was talking about was being able to cancel the query. And that is a thing that most people would like, and is difficult in most databases, because you have to go out of bed, go to the database administrator, find out which is the query, kill that specific process. If you are able to do that from the client easily, I think it would make everybody's life easier, as much as technically I do think that an immutable query, this is what you ask for.
That's one of the reasons I thought FTP is, I know that there has to be somebody in this room who hates the FTP protocol because of the firewall reasons.
I have been an FTP server, but I have better reasons than that to hate the FTP protocol. It's a god-awful protocol.
But don't you think that there are advantages to having a command channel and a data channel? That's what I
would. Overall, no. Overall, I think it costs more than it buys. I wrote an FTP server because we needed a server that would do that would in a robust way do non-anonymous FTP so that our customers could contact us and pick up their stuff. Right now none of the FTP servers out there does this at all well. Mine does. Publish FTP. If you actually need to do that, you can.
I try to forbid my customers from using FTP, but yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
FTP out of bounds though?
Sort of. I don't actually support it. But you know, if you want to close the connection, then the right thing will happen. overall, I think that the separate command and data channels create much more of a synchronization plus than they're actually worth. Firewall aside. And anyway, the other innards of FTP are horribly ugly and messy. I don't even do the right. My version is renamed because it's only me. Just for the pickup day.
You make an interesting point. You said stateless and immutable are a nice combination. Mm-hmm. And I had thought about that before.
it's very easy to make it a comment then.
Very easy to what?
Make it a comment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the nice things about tutorial D. Tutorial D takes the attitude that tables are variables. Relations are immutable objects, and what you do is you say, okay, give me a new immutable object and I'll assign it to this name. So the assignment is just a matter of saying, you no more change a table than you no more change a relation than you change 5. You don't change 5 to 7, you change some variable to hold a 5, a 7 rather than a 5. Similarly, you change some name to table to hold it with Tutorial D calls a relational variable to hold a new relation different from what it had before. Conceptually. I mean, behind the scenes, I don't think it happens very nice initially. But conceptually, that's what happens. You were atomically replacing the old relation with the new, the name of the old relation. The name no longer refers to the old relation, but now atomically refers to the new relation.
And you never change the relation, you just change the reference.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole database is a variable. That's the way to think about it. The entire database.
I will see one catch 22, that even in the NoSQL movement, everybody starts with Hadoop, this new thing that has nothing to do with SQL. First thing they do is go and hide, put SQL on top of it.
Yeah. I actually played around with NoSQL, the database, the DBMS ones, and thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if this actually had a SQL interface as well? Because it would be easy to write. It would just translate the SQL into the appropriate shell script.
Actually, close by here, and I can't talk too much about this, there was an implementation very close to the NoSQL that compressed files with a SQL translator to its own proprietary language. Very efficient for very large queries, but very inefficient for finding one record.
Understandably. No, the NoSQL attitude toward update, by the way, is classical batch merge. Stick your updates in another table and then do what you want.
I guess we're done.
Yep. Ooh. I had an idea. But it's no longer under development.
Well, it hasn't been 4 years.
Well, not there.
Sorry I wasn't there for the beginning.